This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and I'm here with Peter van der Putten, Director, Decisioning Solutions, Pega Systems. Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon. I'm the Director for Decisioning Solutions at Pega. Decisioning is maybe not a well-known term, but the idea is there's a link to AI here. Because if you have artificial intelligence that leads to insights that just end up in a drawer somewhere, you may as well not have had the insight. What we do specifically at Pega is to take these insights and translate that into a decision to do something, to recommend something to a customer. Yeah, it could be around products, sales, service, could be a wide area of different types of recommendations. We use AI to translate into a decision to do something, to recommend something to a customer, hence the name.
One of the major announcements this week at PegaWorld where we're at was you launched the Empathy Advisor. But is that the right name? Should it be Empathy Advisor or Aptness Advisor or Ethical Advisor?
That's a brilliant question. You touched on a couple of key dimensions here. You could say, well, there's a lot of talk in AI about ethical boundaries, ethical limits, which is really important to us. But empathy starts where ethics potentially end. Yeah, there's a lot of real-time recommendations that could be ethical, but not necessarily empathetic. And even aptness doesn't cover the whole range of what empathy can cover. Aptness just would say, well, this is something which is a suitable recommendation to a customer, but is it the most relevant? Is it the recommendation that the customer would be most interested in? And empathy for us is something that really translates into, I put myself in your shoes, put your interest as a customer first, not just my interest as a company, and get to an expert action that's apt, suitable, relevant, empathetic all at the same time.
In terms of the Empathy Advisor, you've determined there are six elements within that. You've mentioned a few, so relevance, suitability, value, which is obviously from the business point of view.
Could be from a customer point of view. Yeah, exactly.
Could be from a customer as well, true. Context, which I think is very interesting. We'll come back to that. Intent and mood. Mood is almost the only one of those which is empathy related almost.
When people talk about empathy, they often think in terms of, can we detect the sentiment of the customer? Is the customer getting irritated or not happy? There is an element of listening to the customer and understanding the mood that the customer is in. But empathy goes further. It's not just about, can we measure the sentiment? It's about, are we taking the right actions with this particular customer?
Is it also about servicing the right options, which is empathic, because actually they're the options the customer wants to hear?
Exactly. It's taking all these dimensions that you mentioned into account and determine what is the best thing to do. Let's say I'm a customer of a bank. At times it could be interesting or relevant to make recommendations around certain products, but I'm not against the bank trying to sell me something. But at the same time, if I just lost my credit card, that's the only thing I want to hear is, when will I get my new credit card? Maybe if I'm about to incur fees because I'm late paying my bills on my credit card, I would actually appreciate a bank that doesn't go like, oh, awesome, we're going to earn some fees. No, give me a reminder or proactively even recommend to transfer money from another account to this account, or maybe pay my credit card statement from my savings account rather than my current account. There could be a very wide variety of next best actions or conversations to choose from, spanning a lot of different areas in a way.
And does this work?
It's not just mood as an input into what would be a good next best action recommendation. Also, as an outcome, you could actually measure what is the impact on the mood or what's the impact on the customer satisfaction of making relevant next best action recommendations. For example, at a couple of customers, what we've seen is that if the next best actions are highly relevant, even if the customer says, I'm not interested in this recommendation, the NPS was higher than situations where there was no next best action recommendation made at all. That's really interesting. Of course, what is required then is that these next best actions are highly relevant.
It's an interesting point, because also, can that go too far though? Because if the company appears to know more about you than you know about you, does that become a bit freaky?
There's a robot professor from, he wrote a paper in 1970 about the uncanny valley, and the thesis is here that it's more about robots than specific case of AI, where he says there's a certain level of comfort or eeriness, the opposite, with robots as they become more humanoid. So if they become more like us, the level of comfort goes up, until it becomes too close. And then actually you could drop into the uncanny valley, because people are getting certain very high expectations. Then you will notice all the differences where it's not just right. it's important indeed that you make clear that it's possible to get an explanation. Why do I get that recommendation? How you formulate the recommendation could also be a way to manage this and to say, well, we think that this might be a relevant service for you, or did you have indeed this particular service issue, then we would like to resolve it for you, as opposed to here's the product you want. I think it's important to play with that.
You refer back to that research around robots and androids. Some of the research on that has actually found cultural differences across different geographies in the world, in that South Korea and Japan are a lot more receptive to humanoid type and realistic robots. Does Pega have any information around whether you have the same challenges for actual AI across the world as well? Are some geographies more receptive to that kind of super intelligence almost?
To some degree, there's a lot of similarities. We did this survey 2 years ago across, I think it was 6,000 or 7,000 customers, and we saw the consumer perceptions around AI were relatively similar. But more in the context of Next Best Action, we have certain customers who are global, so they have deployments in Europe, but then they also have deployments in China or Hong Kong. Let's say in a certain European country, they need to be a bit more touchy-feely about what recommendations you make and how you do it. On the opposite side, in Asia, customers could almost be disappointed if they don't get location-based credit card merchant offers if they walk into a mall. They're waiting for you to push discount voucher for 10% off eating sushi around the corner or dumplings. There are cultural differences here. Absolutely, yeah.
You did a survey recently where France, I think this percentage was 40% of people believe that robots are going to take over the world, and the rest of the world was a lot lower. Was there any explanation behind that at all?
It's the answer that we got, so it would be speculation. That's just a disclaimer now. I'll go off and speculate. I love to speculate. In France, they, and I think it's actually very healthy, they have a very humanistic view, sometimes pessimistic, but a humanistic view on technology. They're always thinking about how is this technology going to affect us. And I think that's really good, because as any technology, AI is not inherently good or bad, but it can be used in good ways and bad ways. And by pushing empathy, we are trying to encourage our customers to use AI in the best interest of customers. But if you don't do that, if no one is pushing or raising red flags, it's not going to happen. So we as consumers, we should unite and maybe put on our yellow vests and demand that our customers are using the AI in our best interest. In that sense, I sympathize with the French. I'm one of them. It's good to think in those terms and to really think about technology in terms of how do we want it to be used, and then encourage companies to use it in that manner.
Coming back to the empathy advisor, how does the system actually determine the empathy score for the next best action?
I think we were speaking about a couple of levers and things that could go into the mix. So it's a multidimensional problem in a way. Imagine we have a potential set of actions we could choose from. I'll say a little bit more about that later, but the question is, how do we determine the best one? And of course, we can look at things like eligibility, are you eligible or not? Also elements like suitability need to come into play. Our AI might rightfully so predict that you're interested in this $5 million mortgage because it has this beautiful picture of a house with a pool, but it's not suitable because it wouldn't fit my financial situation. Another element is need relevance. Is this relevant for me in this particular context? Then you get into maybe a certain set of next best actions that pass all those criteria. Then it's the question is more like, how do I rank? And this is where also this balance, the threshold between are you short-term, myopic, profit-centric, or are you more empathetic, comes into play. Because we could say, well, we're simply going to rank on what is the likelihood for this recommendation to be accepted, which is very customer-centric. It's really about recommending what the customer is most likely to be interested in, versus are we going to take into account what is the margin on that particular offer and how you combine the two. That's, you can imagine, there's a trade-off in terms of saying we're completely going for just recommend what the customer most likely wants, actually also what we actually try to encourage our customers to do, versus taking some element of, for example, margin into account.
Some of that requires knowledge around the customer specifically, but some of it also requires quite a lot of data to get those data points. Is it something a new customer could immediately implement, or would they need to build up that kind of knowledge base?
That's a great question, and you see me pausing here for a brief minute, because sometimes I get these things where customers say, well, this sounds so perfect, we should really do this, but it's more something for our advanced competitor. We're so backward. Our data is such a mess. this is never going to fly within our company. If only I could do this. That's where we want to say, well, actually, starting with the data and just saying, well, how can we get as much data as possible? Or let's first make it all perfect. It's not going to get you anywhere. Today, you're already running your business. It's more about how can we improve this. We really recommend starting more like top-down, one journey at a time. So let's say you start with sales recommendations or service recommendations for certain categories of products that will guide you towards, okay, how do we make that decision? How would we prioritize? What kind of data do we want to feed into the models? So you can really top-down and decide what is the data that we actually need to get started. And you will never have all the data. That's fine. Just get rid of some of those recommendations, propositions, and get started. Because soon enough, it's also about listening. It's also about not thinking that upfront we can design everything in a perfect way. Being empathetic is also about listening to the customer. Let it run live and let the customers tell you which propositions are most interesting. And that will tell you more about ultimately also not just what recommendations or propositions are most interesting for them, but also which data is actually most important for you. And that will guide you then towards like, oh, do we need to collect other data maybe? Or which data quality do we need to improve? And other data actually we could care less because the data is not driving any of the decisions or predictions anyway.
One of the challenges with collecting data for AI engines is bias. What is the Pega approach to detecting that bias and then reducing the bias within your AI engine?
There are multiple levels of answers to this. So for one part, what we find really important is that AI is transparent. So there are some we allow you to balance highly models that are maybe highly accurate but hard to understand versus models that are more transparent, easier to understand, maybe slightly less predictive, but at least you know what's going on inside the model. Also, models need to be able to explain themselves. So at any point in time, which is actually part of GDPR legislation, we should be able to provide an automated explanation. How did I get to this decision? Which is a mix of what probabilities did the model predict and why for this customer, but also what rules were actually applied on top and how did we arbitrate? The first was balancing transparency and accuracy. The second was more automated explanations, explainable AI. The third element is more around measuring bias specifically, right? So if you have certain protected variables like gender or sexual orientation, well, typically you don't have it in your database, but let's say it's a gender, race, etc. What you want to do is to measure that your models are not biased towards those protected variables. So we have methods where you can say, well, let's have a look at, I have a certain model that predicts whatever likelihood to get a mortgage, yes or no. Are you going to be approved for a mortgage, yes or no? It's a good example. We can rank the customers that we have from low score to high score. And then we can see what is the percentage men and women, or what is the percentage of people of a certain background in low scoring to high scoring. You want to minimize any differentiation on the protected variables here.
Is that something that's surfaced automatically? Do you actually have a discrimination engine or a reporting tool that people can say, I've got my algorithm, I've got my results and my next best actions, but actually, can I surface and see, is there a gender bias, is there a disability bias within the results I'm getting?
The first two things, the balancing transparency, accuracy, as well as explainable AI, automated generation of explanations, we already have that out of the box. This third area of measuring the bias that's specifically looking at these protected variables, that's something that we are just now researching. So we already have tools to be able to do that we can make them available to customers on an as-is basis. And we're looking at which of those methods we have do we want ultimately to put into the tool as the way to do it. At this moment, we have a variety of approaches. We make it fully available to any of our customers. But I think the market is also part-time assistant professor in machine learning. In research, people are still debating a little bit what are the best methods to do it, actually. We do have a wider set of those things available. So we have done those analyses ourselves. They're available to our customers. And right now, looking at which of these methods do we want to also really build in as the best practice, the best way to do it.
That's obviously one of the things that's on the roadmap. But what else is on the roadmap? Because this is the first generation of the advisor, isn't it, really?
It is the first generation of the advisor. I think it's maybe good to clarify that it has always been possible. The whole idea of Next Best Action is how can we provide personalized, relevant recommendations to customers. That capability has always been there. What we've done now with the Empathy Advisor is more specifically, we want to put it in your face. if the recommendation that you're making, based on how you set up your decisioning framework, if they're not empathetic. We want to put it in your face, like, how often are you actually violating and making the most empathetic recommendation? In a way that's a more opinionated way to guide people towards what is the best practice. They can pick their slider on any part of the scale, but we want to make it more transparent. And that will, that idea of being more opinionated, so not just have the core capabilities, but building more of that best practice and more the opinionated approach to not just empathetic AI, but also responsible AI. I think that is a main focus for us. We want to give you a little bit of a sneak preview of our strategy. We want to be the orchestrator, the always-on brain. I jokingly said earlier today, the always-on conscience, on top of centrally within the company, guiding all these customer interactions. That also means that we need to be more open in the back end to all kinds of third-party AI technologies as well. That's another announcement that we made today about better integration with AWS SageMaker, which is the Amazon AI capabilities, also with Google Machine Learning, becoming more open on the consuming end to take inputs from other types of data science and predictive analytics. We're certainly going to continue this path of empathetic AI and responsible AI, and then be more open for the rest of the ecosystems. We can use whatever means to make better decisions.
Nowadays, consumers are used to getting the latest tech ahead of business. 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. The business had better technology. It seems with AI, that trend is reversing. But personal AI can't be that far around the corner either. And there are people working on personal AI engines. Are we going to get to a point where we've got the personal AI competing against the business AI?
Yeah, that could happen. You get ecologies or economies of agents that are starting to negotiate with each other, one on behalf of the company, the other one on behalf of the customer. Ultimately, then, what actually is happening then, it's no longer just company and customer. You get a little bit of a continuum between the two. And we already see that happening today. A lot of the company technologies is built much more from a customer first, outside in point of view. All these banks, insurance companies, they were all building systems for internal use for their own employees. They're shifting so much more to building mobile apps or other chatbots or other applications where the customers can do the work. That's from the company a little bit more towards consumer technology. And on the flip side, you have all these aggregators, like insurance aggregator websites or travel or Skyscanner, if you want to book a cheap flight, that actually act more on behalf of the customer.
Taking that slightly further, the personal AI, if I had my own personal AI engine, it would understand me better than a specific company because I would share my own data with my own AI. There's a lot of complex rules around what my AI would then share with the company, but it would then be able to negotiate going forward, which would be quite interesting, I think.
That fits really well with our empathy story, and I can tell you why, because it changes the power dynamics. As a customer, own your data and you decide, like, what am I going to share with you, Mr. or Mrs. Company? It changes the power balance and it forces companies even more to act not just in their interest, but also in the interest of the customer. It will force them to become more empathetic. I think it would be a development that we would like to encourage, actually, because then our customers, who are typically more on the empathetic end, they will win. You know, and companies that are abusing your data or abusing analytics or abusing AI, they're the ones that will essentially lose. So I'm all for it.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.